You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Wednesday. We are on day three without Pacers basketball, and yet somehow everybody on Twitter has not killed each other yet. It's a miracle. As always, I am Tony East, one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, and today we are doing a mailbag. It's going to be 2 days long because we got so many questions because you guys are the best, and I say we because on the other line with me is my lovely co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We should probably set the rules. So for this first podcast, I set a time for 45 minutes. When that timer goes off, we're cutting off this one. Now every question will be answered. So if we only get, let's say, six, whatever we have to answer, we got like 16 questions so far. So let's say we answer the first six. We have 10 more for tomorrow. That's fine. If you want to send any more questions, that's fine. But I'm just saying today's podcast is going to be about 45 minutes. It's going to cut it off at that point because, I don't know, we both had recorded a long time yesterday and we need a little break and then we can recover for a full day fully and then do a long, long podcast tomorrow.
As the podcast grows, which is awesome, I forgot to anticipate that we'd get a lot more questions now this season.
No, we want to answer all of them. I mean, if we really, honestly, if we need to, we'll go 3 days because that's how many, you know, we still have a pretty light week. So we will do that if we have to, which we might have to discuss that in a minute if we get more questions tomorrow. But I'm just letting people know we're going to go about 45 minutes and we're going to cut it off when this timer rings just so we don't go for 2.5 hours because Tony and I just have other things we need to do with our lives than just talk about Pacers for 4 hours. We already do it a lot, but we don't need to do it for 4 hours in a single night on a Tuesday.
Adam, would you like to start with a happier themed question or an aggressively angry themed question?
Oh, let's bring me the aggressively angry
nice
one.
Okay.
I love those.
We are opening up with @Sucka, S-U-C-K-A, Free Mike. His name is @TheIllMetaphysical. He says, mailbag, please tell me there's a way to fire Nate McMillan without the Pacers absolutely tanking the season. He is one of the worst coaches in the NBA and coaches the offense like it's the mid-2000s. Also, his adjustments are a joke with four screenshots with fake scores at the end of the quarter, with the Pacers down 15 after one, 28 after two, 35 after three, and down 50 in the fourth. And McMillan says, I should make an adjustment.
All right. Let's unpack this from the start. No, he is not the worst coach in the league.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll jump the gun and say, no, not even one of the worst coaches in the league. I would say probably about the median.
So who is the worst coach in the league right now? I'm trying to think. There's no Jason
Kidd. Number one worst coach in the NBA right now. That is a great question.
I don't even know. There's no Jason Kidd, so I don't know.
Yeah, Kidd was so obvious last year.
Van Gundy wasn't great last year.
Yeah, that's another one. Man, that's a hard question. Alvin Gentry isn't very good. Is he still the New Orleans coach? I could even not.
Yeah,
even...
but they're pretty good. I mean, they got Davis.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, but yeah.
But now, so like the real critique of this is the offense, which is the 14th right now in offensive rating. Now the question is, how much credit do you give McMillan for the 7th rated defense, right? Do you give him the credit? You know, Larry Bird once gave the defensive credit to Dan Burke under Frank Vogel, so would he do the same thing for McMillan? I don't know. Maybe the defense really is just Dan Burke, because, you know, when you look at the Pacers from 2000 on, they have a good defense every time, and the only consistent really in that run is Dan Burke, right?
Right, absolutely.
So then if it's McMillan's job to coach the offense, yes, he's doing a poor job. That's fair, because offense isn't great. It isn't super creative. They are clearly digging themselves into early holes, and clearly there are some issues with the offense in terms of guys taking stupid shots. I mean, that's the long twos or the not passing enough. So if you think McMillan's only job is to coach a good offense, then yes, he probably isn't succeeding at that at the moment. Now, he's not the worst coach, but he's probably not even in the top 10 in terms of offensive coaching right now, even 15. So it's kind of where do you and is the whole pace thing too part of him trying to find the best way to put defense, or is Dan Burke just pulling the strings on defense and McMillan's just propping it up as the face? That's the question. And I don't know where I stand on that right now, because I actually kind of talked myself in right there to the Dan Burke's the reason they are good at defense, but I don't know. I just don't know. And the problem is you don't know until you fire a guy. So I don't know how you're ever going to know.
Yeah. Coaching is so finicky and hard to evaluate. I personally think McMillan, and I'm going to back up and say one thing. Zach Lowe and Woj were talking about Ty Lue. You listen to this podcast.
Oh, Ty Lue is the worst coach, but he's not in the league anymore.
Yes. But their exact quote was, it's not about getting the best coach, it's about having the right coach. You know, the better coach in theory could be the wrong guy for your roster and getting along with players and stuff. That kind of stuff matters. Like, Earl Watson in Phoenix was terrible, but the players loved him and he got a full season out of it. And that stuff matters. Like, having harmony matters. And Nate's really good at managing egos. Nate's really good at setting up guys to succeed despite not doing so great for McDermott and Miles in that this year. He has some serious pros that he's very good at. And
execution. Really good execution. Yeah. He's one of the best, like, just like practicing a guy to death so they execute plays right.
And something you said that kind of goes against what this tweet says is, and I agree with kind of both of you in a sense, though, but also neither of you. They do.
Oh, my
get,
God. That's the worst statement I've ever heard in my life.
So they do get off to a lot of bad starts, but you can't say they're terrible at adjustments when they come back all the time. You know, something is happening both poorly at the beginning of games and good in the middle of games to make that happen.
Yeah, but I think the adjustment might be just Oladipo yelling at people. Might not even be. Like, think about it. A lot of times when they have these big holes, isn't it Oladipo or Thad Young who's telling the team to get off their fucking – sorry, cuss their F and A's to actually make a play. Like,
I have no idea. I'm not going to bash one dude and credit someone else for the same type of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the part of this, I guess, that I think is if you give Dan Burke the defensive credit or most of it, then McMillan doesn't look so good as I think.
Right.
It's kind of where I'm here on this. And I don't know if that means you should fire him.
You don't.
And then we might have a question of this later. So maybe don't answer now, but like, there's no better. We talked about this yesterday. There's nobody better out there. Maybe they're off the air. So that also is, it's kind of like the opportunity cost. What are you missing out? So yeah, this offseason they might have missed out on Coach Bud. That was a better coach. But like, I don't know who's the better coach next summer or the following summer or whatever. But if this team kind of underachieves in Pritchard's mind, they'll probably fire McMillan, right? If this team only wins 42 games or 44 games and then the first one exit, he might fire McMillan because, you know, I think he has an expectation for this team at least.
Yeah. I agree, and I think them overachieving made it impossible to fire him last summer, even if they wanted Bud. So, it's a tough
spot. There was no way. He had a great year last year. He was tough to be. And I guess nothing not to do with his player development. We can move on to the question, but you know they really haven't developed anybody in his time, right? I mean, they've got Victor Oladipo, but that's it. But they didn't, like, TJ Leaf hasn't been good. They obviously traded away the pick for Caris LeVert. God rest him for his injury and all that stuff. You know, we wish him well. But they haven't really developed anybody, so I don't know. That's also a concern.
I think you can go with Sabonis.
Yeah, I guess. And then is that Popeye, though? Popeye did a really good coaching hamper, too. Like, the point is the infrastructure.
I can't credit one dude and not someone else. Like, that's.
Yeah, I know, and I understand. I think the Pacers, we underrated, they have a really good back-end infrastructure. Whoever is the coach is almost set up to succeed by whoever they have there. With Popeye Jones, and who helped build Hibbert up, who helped early on with Turner, I thought, and now helping with Sabonis. You know, with Burke helping the defensive, like, I think they just have everything else so right that the coach is almost destined to succeed as long as he's not going against the grain too much.
Right. And the offense thing, yeah, we've talked about that on the show before. They like to shoot the open shot, which sometimes to a fault. and drilling that on guys' heads could take a while. Maybe it's really going to be a problem all season, in which case that'll be something to evaluate with him. But yes, that has been problematic so far. To a fault sometimes.
Yeah, let's move on to the next question. I think we can.
Well, I'm only continuing on this because the next question is AJ Reese 1313 at the same thing. Fan show member AJ Reese says, "Why aren't people talking about the coaching? It's so early in the season, but the lack of movement and setups for shooters is incredibly disappointing. I love Vic, but he can't bring us back from 10 plus every game." I agree about the shooters, and Caitlin harps on that every game. Where it seems like, you know, they throw it into Sabonis in the post and everybody just stands there and doesn't do anything. And he has to make some play to get somebody open. And you hate to see stuff like that. It's not creative or imaginative. We were just talking about that kind of stuff. This is a good follow-up from the first question. I guess it's kind of the same question. But I don't know what they're doing a lot of the times when that stuff happens. I really don't.
I would say I have a tweet, I think, from Miller Time. I believe they tweeted something about Miles Turner, like a rhyme. Rosa, red, violets, or blue. Miles Turner needs to take 5 threes per game, something like that. I mean, the lack of creative three-point, getting guys open three-point line is an issue. And the lack of volume of three-point shots is also an issue. I mean, the only time they get a ton of threes is Vic just kind of jacking up threes, which they're not jacking up because he makes them and he's get good looks. But, like, you know, McDermott and Bojan are way below where they're shooting three. I mean, they're combined for 7 threes. They combine for less threes than Vic total. They should be shooting 10 to 12 for this game combined.
What are they shooting now? 18 a game? Right?
That sounds right. Yeah, that number
24. It's 24. To me, Vic, Bojan, and McDermott should be taking almost – I'm sorry. Vic, cross him out. Turner, Bojan, and McDermott should be taking almost 20 a game between those three. Like,
they yeah, and Turner's not taking any threes, and I don't know whether it's he's afraid of doing it or what, but, man, that's – I mean, teams are going to catch on to him shooting some bad threes to leave him open, and that's going to ruin his whole thing
yeah. stretch five. We got that exact kind of question coming up later, so don't spill
okay.
the, don't spill the candy in the lobby, as my boss
oh, my God. My God, you are just today with some of the worst statements I'm hearing.
Hey, my boss at work says that all the time.
Yeah, and you probably roll your eyes when you walk up another room and think, oh, my God, what did he say? Dude, it rubs
off on you, man. Corporate America changes you.
I'm sorry to boss this podcast. I'm sure he's a great guy, nice guy. Don't fire, don't fire Tony for things I say. You know, I'm sure your boss is a great guy. I'm just saying, we all have people bosses who say odd things, whatever. It's okay.
I'm glad the first two questions are about the same thing. It made it easy to keep the discussion going. Number three. Number three is very similar to number five. So I might do them back to back as well. Number three is from at Mayer 5068. His name is Kez. He says, when are we going to see Alize Johnson back in the Pacers? Dude is hooping too good for the G League. That was a nice euphemism for how well he's doing, because he played one G League game and had 27 and 20, which is just nuts.
Wow. I need to pull up his stats.
27 points, 12 offensive rebounds, and 20 rebounds. made two of his four threes on his way to 27 points. Yeah, he was insane.
So you think that Edmund Sumner is the next guy on the to be on the roster, right? If something goes down, somebody else is the next guy in.
Yeah, Sumner. There's a weird clicking sound. Sorry if that ends up on the show. I'm not sure what that's coming from. Sumner is easily the next guy. I think he gets the final roster spot.
But Alize is probably next, right?
Yeah, with Ben Moore getting waived. I think Alize is right there too. He's already on the full roster, but they're just getting.
I don't know why I thought it was a two-way deal.
They're just getting him reps right now. Devon Reed's the other guy in a two-way. He also did very well in the G League. He's averaging 25 and 14. Actually, I think these player stats are behind real time because the team's played three games, and some of these are not three-game stats. But anyway, yeah, Devon Reed's playing very well on his two-way. But yeah, Alize's been amazing. And the next person asked this, which kind of adds the other layer that is important, so I'll just skip ahead. Matthew Eisen at Matthew_Eisen says, Alize keeps grabbing major boards in the G League, and TJ Leaf continues to struggle. Do you think Alize could take his minutes in the rotation as the lethal rebounder? And if he keeps playing like that, yeah, you got to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, I don't know if they can't, they picked up Leaf's options, they can't cut him, but it seems like Johnson is. Should be getting some kind of reps or some minutes in the NBA. Should be getting a shot. Kind of like the way Rakeem Christmas got minutes a few years ago. Like, just like, you're not giving him a ton, but give him 4 to 5 and kind of seeing what he can do. And then if he proves himself, you get more. But clearly, I mean, he clearly is a – first of all, he played enough years in college that he's probably a fully developed player. Like, he's not like some 19-year-old kind of almost freshman, sophomore player that needs to, like, get stronger. That he's got a full-grown body. I mean, he is what he is. It's just about kind of getting – game reps and proving that he can be on the court. So I think he should get some kind of shot eventually. I think we're too early to start going on that, but I feel like I would say usually it seems like January, February range, right around the All-Star break, where you start seeing some of the guys that are been so good in the G League or have been good kind of on the back end in practice getting shots, because you either got injuries to guys, you know, either Leaf turns ankle again, or you got Kyle Quinn is hurt. You know, I could see what could happen if like Sabonis gets hurt or Turner gets hurt for a game or two. You could end up playing some combination of like Alize and O'Quinn in a game and seeing kind of which one is better.
Yeah, to me, it would take an injury to someone, even if Leaf continues to suck, because if Leaf just is terrible, they'll just play O'Quinn. So I think you have to have an injury to like O'Quinn, Sabonis, or Turner for him to actually get a legitimate like rotation shot. But if he keeps playing this well, then I'm sure they'll try to find him some end of game minutes or something like that.
Yeah, and it depends how, pushy Pritchard's from the top on this. Because I remember that was the issue with Paul George back in the day, was they fired Larry O'Brien because he wasn't playing Paul George. And Bird was like, no, you need to play this 20-year-old because he has got some immense talent and he needs to get reps because he's going to be a great player. And that's kind of what they did. Now, I'm not sure Alize is going to be nearly that level, but like it's understanding that like, yeah, okay, you can sacrifice some losses today to play your young guys because, you know, I'm not talking about like every night, but get him 5 minutes a game or some point, you know, for 10 or 15 games, just so he has a little bit of reps in him for next season when he might actually get rotation minutes. Because next season, if they sort of, instead of having this cap space they have and expanding it onto like, you know, $10 million on the four guys, they merge it to $20 million on two guys, they can might need him in the back end.
Yeah, keep an eye on Devon Reed, too. I actually really like that dude. Pretty good defender. He got picked 32nd in 2017, so almost the first round pick that year. And, yeah, he's an okay defender, an okay offensive player on the wing. That's a that could be an NBA player. But
let's
the
question say this, though. G-League stats are useless overall, though.
No, no, that was with the Suns. He was good with the Suns.
No, no, I'm just saying in general, just in general. Not about him, just in general. The G-League stats are useless.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I mean, a lot of guys just get to the G-League and are like, I'm going to shoot a million times so I can get to the NBA when I make a bunch.
Yeah, and they're just useless because you don't – I don't – competition level half the time, and you just don't know how they translate. I mean, Leaf was a 27-17 guy in,
yes,
in the G League, right? So
– yes. Let's move on, though. I like the idea of Alize eventually moving up. A lot of people really liked him. Let me rephrase that. A couple of people really liked him, like, so much pre-draft that it was interesting to me that they ended up picking him and had to do research. Next question comes from Joe Betts at Joe underscore Betts underscore. He used to write. I don't know if you do anymore, Joe. I'm sorry if you still do and I got that wrong. He says the team is primed for major turnover. He means roster turnover next season in the starting five. If anyone, who should Indiana keep? Who should Indiana let go?
All right. You want to do this from the top? You want to start going down? Okay, guys, we're going to keep Oladipo, guaranteed, right? We know, no
discussion. Well, I think he was of the free agents.
Oh, of the free agents. That's yeah. Fair. Okay. I got to pull up. I mean, I know on top of my head if I do it right. So
I think my personal choice, I would keep Kojo and Thad.
Yeah, I don't know if, I mean, I'm iffy on Thad, depending on what the contract is.
Now, try to keep Bojan, but I'd try to.
I'd rather keep Bojan and Kojo.
I'd try Thad. To. Keep, I'd try to keep Bojan and see if he could come off the bench.
I mean, I think Bojan has a spot in the starting lineup, I think, next year, honestly.
If you get a better wing, then that'd be great. But I like Bojan. I'm not saying he shouldn't be a starter. I'm just like, maybe that's the place they try to improve.
Yeah, I guess the question is next year. I think Thad is on his way out, if I'm being completely honest. I mean,
I just do based on how this summer went. But I personally like Thad a lot.
See, I just don't know any. I think, you know, every year he gets a little bit worse because of his age, and I'm just afraid. Like, you don't want to give him a multi-year deal next summer. You just don't. I mean, as much as no, you know, I wish. And somebody might give him a 2 years, 15 or 20. I think at this point, and I think that's kind of the max where he could get. And if he gets that, I think you let him walk. I don't think he's that valuable in terms of that. I think he's going to continue to get a little bit worse each year, just with his age. I think Kojo's should be here. You should try to keep him to stay. I mean, you should try to get him on a 4 year. Mid-level exception kind of deal because he's a solid role player, bench player. You can start him at times, and it's not at the end of the world. Like, he's a perfect guy to have for the long haul. I don't know if he likes it or wants to stay or whatever it is, but that's somebody he's a valuable asset just to kind of keep having. DC is out, I would say, for sure.
Probably the highest on my gone list.
Yeah, so, like, and the question also is, what is your goal next year. So do you want to get minutes for Aaron Holiday and Alize? Because then getting rid of Thad and DC definitely makes sense. So you can kind of plug those two guys in, bring in a big free agent with the rest of your cap space. And, you know, that's kind of where you go from there, right? And you figure out, you know, maybe you bring in a big free agent to replace Thad. You start Kojo at the point guard and you bring a couple, you know, backup guys or whatever it is. So that might be the ultimate game plan. It seems, I guess, to me that having both McDermott and Bojan is a little redundant, I guess, in some sense, because they can't really play together, and they both kind of provide the same set. Bojan's better than McDermott. See, I don't know. I think I was going over their minutes together, like net rating on the court, off the court, and I don't think it was that great. Now, I don't know. I didn't do a ton of research on that, so don't quote me on that for sure, but I don't think it was that great in terms of them on the court together, and that's the only issue.
I'd have to look it up. I don't know. I don't have that either.
Because, I mean – maybe they could put, yeah, I don't know. I have to look that up later on, and that's something probably I'll look into later, like after about 30 games. That's been enough sample size. But that's why, you know, I mean, that's kind of redundant to me. Tyreek, at this point, I don't know. It depends what he's getting. He might, you know, he might not want to be back at this point. But that's an iffy one. I mean, the problem that you're having right now with the Pacers is it's bad when you're this early in the season, you already have like four guys that you think you could get rid of because that means they're not playing that well, and that sort of is a, not a good sign for the team.
Let's put it I only have two, but I agree. That is concerning.
Well, so where do you stand on Tyreek?
Depends what he asks for. It depends how much he can improve on his shaky start.
Okay, so who are the two then? DC and who
are the other ones? DC and Tyreek are the two that I'm like, all right, if they want to go, they can go. I'm not going to up my offer.
Yeah, I think I'm – I'm there on Thad almost, I guess.
I will have my offer for the other three that I think.
Yeah. I think we both think
Thad. Bowie on that, right? That. I just think Thad is super underrated and super good.
But we both think Bouillon should be back, right? We
agree, yeah. Yep.
He's been too good. I mean, he's
in just some
been...
role, he should be back. Yeah, he's important.
Yeah, he's an important. He's and he's just like he gets. He feel like he actually gets better every year. Maybe not a ton better, but just slightly better each year.
His rookie year, he was 26. He's still young in NBA years. I mean, he plays in summer all the time and plays overseas, so not really. But
yeah, no, I'm worried about overall minutes on his body, I guess, eventually. But
yeah,
right now he seems fine.
Right,
and you know what they really need, right? They need a point guard and some other forward player.
Yep, I agree.
Plus, that's expendable because you might lean towards starting Sabonis next year.
Yes, that is certainly that is true as well. I would not go for that myself, but if they do go for that, that makes the most sense, and I would not push back.
Yeah, because I don't know. I would love to see Sabonis play 37 minutes and see how many points he could average.
That would be great.
I would just love to. I mean,
you care about how many points he can average. I just want him to be effective, and if playing one minute makes that possible, go ahead.
I think if he played 36 minutes a game, he could, or whatever, 34 minutes a game, he could average 20 points a game.
Would he lead the league in games fouling out?
Yeah, that's the question. We talked about this yesterday. I mean, that is the question. Could he stay out of foul trouble? But yes, I understand what you mean there. But if he could not foul out, then yes, he could put up probably 20 a game.
Our next question comes from at Dan Pacers fan. Daniel says, serious question. Whose decision was Turner's lack of three-point attempts?
I have zero idea. Turner's?
I have no clue either. I'm going to go with a broad answer. Because I think I have an inkling here. My broad answer is coaching. And I put like a fake umbrella over the word when I said it. This is his lowest attempts per game at 1.1 since his rookie year. His three-point attempt rate is also at 12.5%. It's also his lowest since his rookie year. And I attribute that with my own viewing eyes to the emphasis they've put on him actually rolling more. Short rolling sometimes to get a mid-ranger from like the slot or the free throw line, and actually rolling sometimes, which seems to not be working very well, just to get him reps as a roll man instead, so he can be more versatile in that elk. And if it's about development, then that's fine. But at the same time, his three-point shot's what makes him effective, and teams have already seen like they stop guarding him sometimes out there. So it is concerning to take that away from him.
For me, from my test, it seems like a lack of willing to shoot it and a lack of getting to the spot where it's – he's taken a couple too many long twos per game. So that's a lot.
Yeah, gets too many, too many.
And a lot of it, he doesn't take it. I mean, I know, I feel like there was some statement in the summer how he doesn't want to be known as a three-point shooting center, which sort of was concerning to me because that's what you should want to be. Like, that's
he
like.
Talked to Zach Lowe about it. And he said he just wants to make a higher percentage of them. Not.
But that's not, I don't know. No. He wants to do both. Like, I don't like that. That's kind
exactly
of
what he said.
I know that's what he said, but I just that concerns me because it doesn't seem like he's being given the right advice by somebody.
Did the coaches tell him that that's what he should do, or does he actually want that?
Well, clearly he's doing that. He's not taking him out a ton of them.
Yes, which could be from anyone, and it's hard to say with that kind of stuff, especially early in the year. If you know,
getting bad advice from somebody, let's put it that way. Somebody's giving him bad advice.
Yes, that is true. I'm trying to pull this up, but I have to read through it quickly, which is hard. So the NBA has tracking data for touches and like their location on the court. And I'd have to go year by year. I might have to look at it. Miles Turner gets 26.9 front court touches per game. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to be able to deduce any analysis from this quick enough to give you a good answer.
That's fine. I mean, I just think this year he has seemed uninterested in shooting the three-point shot to me.
I wish he would just let it fly every time. There's some truth to both there. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and I mean, even if he shot 33% on five threes, that would actually be not terrible.
Did you know? I did not know this, and it blew my mind. That he is taking the lowest percentage of his shots from long two of his career this year. I would never have known. That seems wrong, but it's accurate.
Okay. I mean, I just
way up in the restricted area.
Yeah, like I mean, I understand. He's not been more efficient though, right? His overall percentage is not better than it's ever been.
No, his true shooting percentage is his second lowest of his career.
Well, man, it's only 4 years, so you know he's this third, his third highest of his career. I'll look at it that way.
Well,
no, I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Was it? No, his effective field goal percentage is the worst of his career.
Yes, I did true shooting, which was a poor use of what we're talking about, actually. You're accurate.
Is it effective better?
Yep. For what we're talking about, you're absolutely right. Yes, his effective field goal percentage is the lowest.
Right, because true shooting takes him free throws, right?
Yes. Although I don't think he's going to continue to be a 12.5% 3-point shooter. So.
Yeah, but the problem is I don't think he's taking enough to boost. You know what I mean? If he's taking one a game, it's going to take forever to creep that back up, right?
Right. Yes,
he's got to take. If he takes three a game, the next three for the next.
He's also 2 for 16. So if he made one more, he'd be at 20%. Like
no, okay, he'd be at 18%.
Yes, it's over 6% per shot.
No, I understand. It's the fact that he's taken 16 threes in 14 games. Like
yeah,
he should have taken 50 by now, and he should be 20 or 40.
I wish that was the case. That is where the balance of, and he's not getting enough touches to even take that many a game. So that's where the elk is. He's not popping as much, which I would guess is coaching directive. And then when he actually does catch it, he's not shooting as much, which I would guess is something in his own head.
His overall shots are down too. I guess he's shooting the most effective, his highest 2-point percentage, we could say, which is good. Yep. But like for a center, you want that to be like not a little higher than 54, don't you? Don't you want to be like in the near closer to 60, right? What's the bonus? The bonus is closer to 60, isn't it?
The bonus is in shooting insane, like 70%. Higher?
Okay. But like right for a center, it's like, and even a shooting center, 3-point shooter, like 70 is what you want. Also, Sabonis is at 68 point.
69. Nice.
I mean, like, that's where it's kind of concerning because, like, as a center, you got to shoot like in close to 60 to be effective, I guess.
Yeah,
in my thought. But
this leads into our next question too. So I'm gonna insert it while we continue this discussion. Colts fan Ryan also was on Fan Show. What's up, Ryan? Said, what has caused Miles to stagnate offensively? What can be done to fix it? More popping would get him back to more how he used to play. At the same time, I understand them valuing trying to get him roll touches. I don't think they care that he continues to get beat up on Twitter. I think they care about him developing a nice roll game, which looks ugly right now, but the reps are important.
Wait, so I kind of have a question.
Go ahead.
So if he took 5 threes a game and shot 35%, would he still be getting killed on Twitter?
No.
Right? No, if he shot 33% on 5 threes a game, he'd be killed on Twitter?
6 points right there.
So you think it's the overall points per game? If he was at 18 a game, nobody would get, or even 15 or 16 a game, people would start.
Scored 11 points per game, but more of them came from outside, and he took less shots from the inside. I think people would love that.
Okay, I'm just thinking the
offense would be better with him out there because he'd be spacing the floor. Like that stuff matters.
I mean, I honestly think part of his offensive woes though are like the end of games. Is it just determined? Oh, he's supposed to take every shot. Like, is that what it is? Like, why is, you know, Turner? I say this with a big sigh, but like, he's the only other player on the team that maybe can get his own shot, right? I mean, any other player on the team?
Sabonis can.
You're right. Okay, that's fair. But like, Turner is similarly can get his own shot if he really tried. Like, he could get open in the corner. You know, we saw put on the ground against Whiteside. Like, he can get his own shot or off a pick, he could get open easily. Like, he's one of the few players in the team that can do that, and that's
at the end of games. They don't run sets for him. Like a lot of his clutch
shots are
different, are not within the flow of the offense.
And I understand that. I guess that's why I say it. I'm not saying it's on him. I'm saying like who predetermined that the entire offense can run through Oladipo at the last 4 minutes? Why can't they run anything else? And is that coaching? Is that, you know, just Oladipo saying it's me? I'm going to do this because like Oladipo put up 18 shots a game last year, and this year's at 20, and that's because he got an extra shot per game at the end of games basically this year. Got to jack it up. And so I don't know. And the problem is this is not 2 years in a row almost of the same thing. And 3 years to go back to the Paul George era. So it's like at first I thought, oh, maybe if they're just developing it, then it was like, okay, what are they doing? Now it's like it's almost like a consistency thing. And it's like, it's just never going to be him. I don't know.
Is he still has a positive net rating and he still has a positive on off net rating? Like
he's a fantastic defensive player.
He's
so good that
it's like, talking about his offense is super important, but I get why they're developing him to have a more refined offensive game, given how good his defense is.
I'll tell you why he's getting crushed, and it's only because of potential, right? He has the potential to literally be
playing out of his dang mind
on offense. But like, if Turner has the potential, and to be like an Embiid type level player on both, like, you know what I mean? He has that potential. He might still have it. I'm starting to see a win offensively, but like, you know what I mean? He just he has, like, if he just had, I don't know, the confidence or the opportunity, you feel like he could put up 18 points a game if he really wanted to, right? If you really felt
like
you were coaching.
I don't think Embiid, like, potential. Embiid's way better on the glass and as a perimeter defender and stuff like that.
No, but I mean in terms of impact on both ends of the floor, I guess is what I meant.
Oh.
Embiid, again.
No, Embiid could win MVP this year.
But Turner has a chance to be in the top 15 players in the league if he could develop an offensive game. Because you add
– maybe, yeah. He'll
probably be on one of the two all-team defensive teams this year. Maybe or close. It depends, like, I guess.
Rudy Gobert with a jumper.
Yeah, but that's what he could be. I mean, he has that potential, right? And Rudy Gobert with a jumper is one of the best players in the league.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, that's what Embiid is. And Embiid has got a little more skill sets, I get that, than Gobert offensively. He's a little more skill. But essentially, Embiid is Rudy Gobert with a post game. The really good post game.
But at the same time, what makes Gobert so good, he's real good at rolling and catching lobs. Like, that's huge. And Miles has terrible hands, and his roll game is just adequate right now. They're trying to work.
But if Gobert could shoot the three instead of having lobs, he'd be the best. He might be
Lobs are
Anthony Davis.
Lobs are super efficient.
Yeah, but if
are more efficient
if he could but if he could shoot the three like Davis, he'd be Anthony Davis, literally, Gobert would be. Like, you understand that, right?
Yes.
Like, and that's where Turner, I guess my whole point is that Turner maybe has the most potential of any player on the roster, maybe in the league, to Anthony.
Maybe we're wrong about that. I think we're past it.
I agree. I think we've reached the past the point, but at some point along the line, you felt like he could have done that, right? Somewhere between year two and three, you're like, this guy could be an offensive marvel.
Well, he was going to be the lead option, yeah, but not anymore.
Like he's gonna nail 40% of his threes, and he's gonna be able to take guys off the dribble, and he's gonna be able to block shots on one end. He's gonna be like a disruptive defensive force. No, I think somewhere between year two, after year two, people might have thought that.
I don't think I ever got to that.
Maybe not off the dribble, but like it's just an offense, a guy who you could just run around the perimeter, just nailing jumpers. You know what I mean? Pull up jumpers nonstop
and here,
off the pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of this question too is, why has he stagnated? Did you know this? This is for everybody, not even you, Adam, or just Ryan, or everybody. Did you know Miles Turner's career high usage was his rookie year?
Wow, that's insane.
Right? That blows my mind every time I see it. I mean, they've all been within a percent or two, which so it's not like crazy, but it's just like he's never really gotten a big boon in an opportunity ever.
Well,
from Vogel to McMillan, it didn't change much. When Vic came in, it went up a little bit, and now it's down to how it was his first year with McMillan. But
so, and I'm going to throw some stats at you too to go with this. So, in terms of win shares, which aren't the perfect set, his best win shares, which he might be, so you extrapolate it out, he's on pace for like five, six win shares, right? Four?
This year? Four.
Which would be about what it was last year. But way worse than his second year where he had eight win shares. But his defensive offensive plus minus or box score plus minus is his best defensive season. I mean, he's improved defensively. And I can see that with my own eyes. Defensively, he can actually is competent again at guarding guys. Getting switched and not being a complete, disaster like he was a little bit last year against LeBron. He is obviously he's making blocks away from the rim, which is just like insane. And that's what making him so much like. Defensively, he's got it. I mean, and maybe that's what he worked on, and that's why he's got his defensive game is becoming, elite level. I don't know if he can win defensive player of the year or be in the all defense category because there's so many kind of good defensive centers, but he's getting up there in terms of awesome defensive players. So it's just the offense has, if not gotten better, has gotten worse, at least, or not evened out, it's gotten worse. You know what I mean? That's the only issue.
Yeah, and that's because he's doing skills that he's less refined at, which is coaching. And him not obviously, yes, him not being good at them is on him, but like him doing them more is coaching directive.
And he might be in his own head now. I mean, like at some point, I feel like it was like because it was like his second year, he surprised everyone, right? Nobody saw it coming out. This guy can shoot threes, he kind of shocked everybody. Then it was like he got in his own head of like, oh, now they're leaving me open because they think I can't hit it, and I can't hit it. Like it's a very much it's a head case problem, and I don't know. And he feel like he's somebody who always has troubles with that at times. Like he just can't get out of his own head and can't kind of, when he's struggling, he really struggles. Like when he's playing bad, he's playing really awful. There's no way getting out of it. And so that's an issue. But I think, we should, you've said it a lot. We should say defensively, he clearly has improved and he clearly is an incredible defensive player. And that's why the defensive rating also is seventh in the league as a team, because him with Vic, with Thad is an incredible defensive trio, really. And so that's why they're, even 8-6 right now. That's why they're holding the best teams in the league, like the Rockets, offensively to under 100 points at home. Like that's incredible. It's just, if he could be a little better in offense, like we could actually win those games. Like, exactly. He's a little better. You know, if he was 2 points better, they would be able to win some of those games. That's the problem.
What time are we at? Do we have time for one more?
Yeah, we got 10 more minutes left at least.
Oh, wow. Well, we did start at like 10:20. You're right.
We got 10 minutes. Well, you'll hear the timer go off. Don't worry.
I'll hear the timer go off. Okay. I don't know his real name. His name and his at are the same. At Aurus, A-Y-R-U-U-U-S. How would you pronounce that? Aurus?
Oh, I can't see it, so I don't know how to pronounce it. Like you spell out like gibberish for me. For all I know, we'll do the best you can, and then we'll see if he corrects us.
I'll just go with Iris. I hope he corrects me. Okay, this is probably the most fun one of the show. Bleacher Report writing about trades. Apparently, I didn't see this, but I wish I looked into what the headline of the article was. Pacers receive Trevor Ariza. Suns receive Darren Collison and a future second conditional upon Indy's obligation to Brooklyn. Thoughts?
Ariza this year is, 34% from three? Not great from the field overall, but take most of his shots from three. 10 points a game, but I'm not sure that means anything. Yeah, I mean, who was the second guy in the trade? It was Darren Collison
The other protections on the second. So, like, if it doesn't go to the Nets, it would go to the Suns.
That seems a little too cheap for him, but maybe the trade line you get that because of reason I'm expiring, stuff like that.
Yeah. If you recall.
Does the salaries match up?
Yeah, they're close. I think it's like 15 and 10 and a half. I'm not sure.
So you need to throw something else in, right? You might throw something else into that, right?
I'm not sure. I'll look into it. If Ikeani Bogu is what makes you do that trade, then maybe.
You do it. That's fine. Do it. Do it tomorrow.
Yeah, just for hypotheticals. I like Ikeani, but, you know, just to keep the discussion going. If you'll recall from the summer, I was a big fan of them potentially signing Trevor Ariza.
So was I. We were there together.
Yes, we were there together, and the trade is not legal. So.
Okay, so they need some other things, but they're close. I know. I think Ariza is 15 and Darren Collison is 10 and a half.
Yes, that is accurate.
Quinn maybe in that, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe I'm missing something that's in this. Anyway, I loved Ariza's fit here. Like, potentially, dude can defend. Like, you can see the Rockets. This is obviously a twofold concern with Melo being an atrocious defender, but they miss him on the wing, his defense, so much.
Yeah, they really do.
So much better than Ennis, even on defense. And Ennis is not bad. Like, he's just so much better. He's a quality player. And a one-year deal was exactly what I was hoping they could get him on. Suns did a great job to do this because he is older. And if he stinks, then he stinks. But it's clear that maybe he's lost a shooting stroke a bit or slash he's playing with no point guard to set him up, which is accurate. But he doesn't seem like he's slower, so he could still apply that good wing slash power forward level. He's 6'8", I believe, defense. 6'8", 220.
You know what I would rather them do? I'd rather them trade Tyreek for him, just straight up, flip him.
Yeah, I wonder if the article is about the Suns getting a point guard.
Yeah, I mean, not that Tyreek, I just think you could – there's a way where you can move Collison to the bench. And I don't know. This is probably – we're too early season to say, but Oladipo might be a better off of being a point guard. I mean, that's just the thought.
Oh, yeah. I think so for sure.
We've always had that thought. He's making the point.
I got it. Okay. It's from Dan Favalli, my guy. Love Dan. He's been on this show before talking Knicks. He said 5 trade ideas for NBA's tanking teams. Okay. So the idea was built around helping the Suns get the point guard help, not around the Pacers getting the wing.
Well, Tyreek is a point guard.
Yes.
That would help. Probably. I don't know. Maybe it would.
So let me read. He's going to get his rationale for this for Phoenix is that they're going to buy out Ariza, so they might as well just get a second for him.
Oh, true. Plus, the Pacers can get him because if he gets bought out, he's not coming to Indiana. He's probably going back to Houston.
So here is a blurb from this. Giving up Darren Collison isn't something that should scare the Pacers away. His three-point shooting percentage has fallen off a cliff from last season's league-leading mark, and they have more than enough ball handlers to pick up the slack in his absence. Jettisoning him would open the door for Tyreke Evans to assume a larger role.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd maybe rather give up Tyreke and let Collison be there. And
yeah, I might think about that too.
And I guess you play Ariza off the bench, but then close with him maybe. I would like that. You know, that way you don't, you know, starting lineup, don't disrupt any of the real chemistry issues, I guess. But
if you could, imagine Kojo, Vic, Ariza, Thad, and Miles closing games and just being impossible.
That's what I was thinking. That would be a really good defensive team.
Yeah. That would be cool. And I like the idea of like building on your biggest asset, the defense, and getting him would be a great way to do it.
So let's just hypothetically, that matchup against the Sixers and
the Raptors and
the Celtics. Yeah, you
have the Sixers so much. You finally have a guy to put on Ben Simmons and not just get destroyed.
Or Butler now.
Oh, geez. Yikes.
But then you have a guy to put on Tatum.
Yeah.
That's huge. And then you have a guy to put on Kawhi.
Exactly. I wanted him for a reason. He's real helpful. It would suck to give up DC, but if he plays like he has been for the first 14 games, I think he had a good stretch in the middle of these 14, but the front end and back end has not been pretty. Maybe look into something like that. And I like the creativity here that, you know, both teams actually could probably benefit from something like this.
Yeah. And I mean, we can come at that another time, but I think DC's on his way out of the starting point guard at some point this season, to be honest.
Yeah. Kojo has been awesome, which is a part of it too. I think every time anyone talks about the potential of like switching the lineup, it's because the backup's been so good. And that's really good for the people.
And truly, I think you could do that. And I think DC would thrive with the bench unit, to be honest. I think he would do
that.
He's a professional. He's not going to throw a fit about it. And maybe what you do is you wait for DC to probably get hurt for a few games, which I mean, as age, that's just, I'm not trying to be mean here, but like he's bound to miss 4 or 5 games or something just because it's like, you know, most 30-year-old NBA players don't play a full season. It's just the way it is. So then you can justify, Kojo play well in your 3-game absent. We're going to play off the bench start, and you just leave him there and kind of let him be. And that way he doesn't seem as demoting, I guess, is the right way to put it.
Remember last year when Kojo started and everything went well, and everybody was kind of thinking about the lineup change, and I was kind of pushing back because, to me, it's like I'd rather have DC in there and have the highest potency of offense you could have. Well, if he's not supplying that potency anymore, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, and remember how he put DC play off the bench too in some of those when he came off the bench the first couple games and he played really well with him. Then they struggled for a game, and that's when he inserted back in the starting lineup. And then I think DC had that really good game against Miami at the end of the year that kind of sealed him as a starter. But then he was pretty decent in playoffs, up and down, but a couple good games at the end that were kind of important. But yeah, I mean, I think maybe if they keep having slow starts, you may think about putting Kojo in because maybe it gets the offense moving better. You know what I mean? Because things kicking around faster, more passing, because that's the issue, right? I would say it doesn't matter end games, whatever, but right now they're starting so slow, they need somebody to help. They need something. Yeah. And maybe you can provide a more stable offensive flow for the second team.
Right. That's certainly possible.
Yeah.
Dang, this is a hard trade to work, though. I've been trying to figure it out, and I cannot get it done.
Wouldn't you be Tyreek straight up for...
Oh, Tyreek works better.
Tyreek's making 14 and Ariza making 15, so that should work.
Tyreek's at 12.4. You can't throw him in. I'm trying to cheat.
Oh, he's 12.4? I thought he was at 14. I think he's at 14.
No. He's 14, or his max he can get is 12.4. He has 12 guaranteed. I can get to about 12 with EK and Bojan pretending. That'll work. Yeah, Tyreek would work.
Okay, so you probably have to do DC, EK, and Leaf. That could probably get you there.
Oh, God. As soon as you throw in Leaf, it changes, though.
Why?
I don't feel like they want to give up on Leaf in 2 years just to add a rental Ariza.
Why? Now you can make room for Alizé, going back to our old other questions. Seriously, you make room.
You're right.
Leaf is useless, Tony. Not to be mean, but Leaf is literally, I mean, useless. Of course,
man, I don't want to give him players before 3 years ever, though.
No, he'll go to Phoenix and become like the next, you know, he'll be a rotation player playing huge minutes
down 3 all of a sudden. You know what? TJ Leaf in Phoenix learning under Ryan Anderson might be the perfect place for him.
But like, the thing about Leaf is like, he might just need a new situation, to be honest. I mean, that's where he might have to flourish. Like, he might not, you know what I mean? He might just need somewhere. What?
You can't get minutes here.
Yeah, maybe just go to like Orlando or somewhere they just play him, you know, play a ton of minutes and he can at least prove himself and then work his way back to a contender.
I'm going to give Leaf time. I really am, but.
Well, it's really hard in a contender to play your young guys unless they're like really good. You know, you don't have time to work through their mistakes.
I know.
It's going to be the biggest problem with Aaron Holiday, right? Is that they're not going to be able to work through his mistakes. And that's what worries me.
Throw him in big time as the backup next year. and they have a sucky bench unit potentially, or they give him extra time and have to deal with him not playing very much on his rookie deal.
Yeah, it's just it's hard. It's hard to do that, and it's why really it might be worth trading your picks at this point for something you can do it, because you have no your picks have less value than normally at their spots because you're not going to play the guys. Like, you know, if you give up with two first rounders in the next, like let's say this year's and the 2 years from now when you're still Volodipo, or maybe you still have it might be worth it. And that was the timer, by the way.
Oh, that's amazing. I was going to say, is that the 45-minute timer? Because we're about done. That was great.
How many questions did we get through?
We got through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of our.
Perfect. So we have another 8.
Exactly half, which is great.
Should we let people submit more questions tomorrow if they want?
Like, I guess.
New people can't be the same person. If you already submit a question, we're not going to answer it yet. But if you have submitted a question you want to, you can.
Yes, that would be cool.
How about that rule?
Yeah, appreciate the questions. They're always fun. And I try to do as little prep work for these as possible so I can.
Yeah, I'd be surprised to think on the spot.
A combo of anecdotal and statistical-based answers. But I love doing mailbags. I think they're really fun.
Yeah, and I think we'll do this. We're doing another. Obviously, we'll have another one tomorrow. We'll do at least once a month, I'm sure.
Tomorrow, we have questions from a lot of familiar faces, including my favorite person's name to say on Twitter.
Okay.
So I'll tell you who it is when we stop recording.
That's fine.
What are you writing this week? Anything?
I wrote that Sabonis and Turner thing. It seems to be
doing pretty well. Yeah, you should read that. It was very good.
Yeah, it seems to be doing pretty well on SB Nation and stuff like that. I think that and the one last week I wrote also were like the top, one of the best of SB Nation of the week, I guess. The Oladipo thing I wrote that was kind of sarcastic. But I don't know. That's a debate we're going to keep having throughout the year is on the Sabonis and Turner thing. And it just
really?
I know, really. But like I said, I mean, you know, from the first 14 games, you can just clearly see Turner's better defensively. So, and that sort of changes the whole outlook on him. You know, you still might have to trade one eventually just because it's the only way you can get the next best player. But, you know, I do have to say Turner's better defensively than I thought he was going to be. And Sabonis is significantly better offensively than I thought he was going to be. So it's both have their strengths at different times. So we'll see how that plays out.
Caitlin has Cream of the Crop coming out tomorrow. Always read those. And she says,
"What are you writing this week?"
I want to finish this. I want to do a bet with you. Caitlin says, I don't remember her exact phrasing. I should have it up so I don't get this completely wrong. But I think it's a negative thing about a player. And I would like you to guess what player you think it's about. Because I have a guess, but I don't know if I'm going to be right.
Negative thing about a player.
The exact phrasing from her is... I can't figure it out. There it is. The opposite of cream of the crop is headed your way in the morning. So something bad.
Well, luckily, as an admin on the Anycorns, I can really read this before you. I'm not going to give it away. If I wanted to read it, I could.
I'm gonna guess it's about Tyreek, but I will ask you off air, and I'll find out the answer.
I had a guess too about Tyreek. He's been He's been the most disappointing of any of the players this season, really.
Yes.
I'm running DC. Tyreek.
So if hers is about Tyreek, I'll be mad because then mine will be please stomp up.
Did you write the Devin McDermott thing, or was that – I know it was around 8.9 seconds, but did you
write that? I did write the McDermott thing.
People should read that because I read that and I was like, man, I wish I wrote that.
Get Doug McDermott with the ball, please.
Yes. That's the thing that I have to say is for me, that's my comment is that when I wish I had wrote that, it means that I liked it a lot. That's for me at least.
So stay tuned for tomorrow's mailbag. And then Friday, I don't know who's doing Friday. We haven't talked about it. We'll talk about Heat and Hawks, probably a little book. So just be on the lookout for that stuff. But, yeah, thank you for tuning in today. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow.